Welcome to Rights Watch, a program about human rights around the world from Human Rights Watch. I'm your host, Jesse Graham. The International Criminal Court recently issued an arrest warrant for Omar al-Bashir, the president of Sudan.
We're talking about horrific abuses, murder, extermination, rape.
That's Elise Kepler. She's with the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch. She says the warrant is a step forward for the International Criminal Court.
And the decision by the judges to move forward with an arrest warrant for a sitting head of state for these most grievous crimes is incredibly significant.
I spoke with Elise Kepler and filmmaker Paco de Anis about the charges against Bashir. De Anis' film, The Reckoning, is about the birth of the International Criminal Court. It's playing at the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival this week. De Anis says the court was created to go after the world's worst criminals, like Sudan's president.
One example of a worst criminal is a head of state who uses the state to kill his own civilian population. So this is the kind of crime that the ICC was created to go after.
De Anis grew up in Argentina during what was called the Dirty War. State-sponsored killings were the norm.
I lived that whole era firsthand where it was thought that dictators would never face justice. If you said that, you were considered some kind of an airhead. You know, you had no sense of reality, and this was impossible. Well, we saw that change.
The generals in Argentina did face justice. The prosecutor at that time was Luis Moreno Ocampo. He's now the prosecutor at the International Criminal Court. The court was formed in 2002. De Anis' film follows the prosecutor through his first rocky years. De Anis says he set out to make the film because he believes in the court's mission.
My experience with victims is always that they want justice. It's just natural. Anywhere in the world, whether it be in Latin America or here in the U.S. or in Africa, when members of your family are killed, when you're maimed, when your life is destroyed, turned upside down by people in power with absolute impunity, you want justice. It's a natural human feeling.
The film opens with a scene from Congo, where the court's first trial is taking place. A group of local people walk through a field of tall grass. They come to a clearing where they find skulls and bones. It's the scene of a massacre.
Parce que bila justice, batu kameme habata kuwa, bahabata ishimiana.
Without justice, people have no respect for each other, one of the Congolese men says. If this is left unpunished, it will happen again.
There were bones strewn all over, and they just said, you know, we abandoned the place and never even got to bury our people. When you're out there in the fields where you see a big tree in Africa, usually there used to be some huts around it. And, you know, now you see those big trees there and there's no huts.
The court has also issued warrants for the arrests of the leaders of the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda. Elise Kepler says it was the Ugandan government who called on the court to prosecute the rebel group.
One of the major crimes the LRA is implicated in is abducting children and sexual enslavement and using children as fighters, porters, abductions, murders, rape. Those are the kinds of abuses that the LRA has been involved in.
But the leaders of the Lord's Resistance Army have not yet been arrested. There have also been calls for the court to pursue charges against the Ugandan government. And the LRA has waged a public relations campaign against the court.
People feel very intimidated by the LRA, understandably. So when they say, they go to a village and say, are you for the LRA and against the ICC? People say, yeah, well, you know, who's going to say no? I mean, you'd be risking your life if you did that.
I guess what I'm asking is there a way that the ICC warrants have sort of backfired in Uganda?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion and a lot of people, different stakeholders saying, oh, the people just want peace. They don't want justice. And it's really important to flag, as Paco says, the role of intimidation and the role of that feeling of pressure and concern and also, frankly, desperation. The people have been suffering for so long that when we were in Uganda, while some people certainly stressed the need for justice, others felt whatever it would take to get to some kind of stability was desirable, and particularly because they also felt somewhat betrayed by the fact that arrests had not been made by the ICC.
Yeah, and I would add that I found that most people, especially the victims, want both. They want peace and justice. They don't really see one excluding the other.
The peace versus justice debate has also come up around the case of Sudan's leader, Omar al-Bashir. Some African leaders have opposed the arrest. The African Union is pushing for the deferral of the warrant. They argue that Bashir's arrest would dash any chance of negotiating peace.
I think it's a false argument. African leaders don't want to be limited in their power, right? So suddenly they're realizing there's this court which actually puts limits on them, on the way they can behave. And
but there's
all
also
the victims are African. 30 countries in Africa are members of the ICC. This is not a neocolonial court. This is the superpowers don't belong to this court. You know, this is a court which most of the members are from Latin America that had a long experience with abusive governments that killed the civilian populations. And Africa has 30 countries as members. This is I think that it's a false argument. And entirely all the victims in these African cases are African.
You may think it's a false argument, but it's an argument that has legs, right? I mean, it is something that you hear a lot, and that a sense that Bashir has used it very successfully. It has resonance in Africa and also in the Middle East, a sense that this court, other similar bodies, are imperialist Western impositions.
Mm-hmm.
That is an attempt to, in our view, misportray, mischaracterize the ICC and what it's doing. As Paco said, African countries have been incredibly involved in the ICC. And what's often overlooked is that the cases currently before the ICC, yes, they are right now primarily or entirely for situations in Africa, but three of them were referred voluntarily by the states involved. So right now, some African leaders are trying to portray this court as anti-African or targeting Africa, when it's in fact the African countries involved that asked the court to become to take up these situations. This court is about serving victims. It's about justice for victims, and that applies whether or not the victims are African, Latin American, from wherever.
In order to serve those victims, the court depends on member countries to turn over alleged war criminals voluntarily. So it's limited in its ability to enforce warrants.
What we've seen is that it doesn't always happen overnight. It doesn't always happen as quickly as people want, but it can and does happen when the political will of states is there. And a good example on that, I think, is the Charles Taylor situation. This is the former Liberian president who was indicted by a UN-backed Sierra Leone war crimes court. Charles Taylor did go into exile in Nigeria for several years after he left power in Liberia. But following a number of different developments over the course of those years, he was ultimately surrendered by the Nigerian government to the United Nations, who then transferred him to the court. And he's now facing trial. So the key here is we may not see Bashir arrested tonight, but it's crucial to not lose hope and also to work to build that political will to see that those indicted for the worst crimes are, in fact, surrendered. Meanwhile, though, Bashir is now stigmatized by the issuance of that arrest warrant. So it's important to realize that.
But he's also on the defensive and, you know, throwing out NGOs. And how do you see all that as well?
On that front, it's really, I think, the Sudanese government has sunk to a new low. And to expel humanitarian groups and leave more than 1 million people at risk as a result of lack of sufficient resources and care is something that the international community needs to respond very strongly to. And that action is absolutely no justification for avoiding justice or ignoring justice. In fact, it reveals exactly the intention and behavior that led to the arrest warrant in the first place.
Yeah, I think they're digging a very deep hole for themselves. You know, I think it'll backfire, throwing out all the humanitarian workers.
Paco de Ana says his own childhood in Latin America makes him hopeful about the future of the court.
The generals in Argentina that lorded it over the country and, you know, killed 30,000 people, they ended up going to prison. Fujimori is on trial right now in Peru, and the list goes on and on. And we in Latin America, we saw a sea change from a continent that was completely populated by dictatorships to a continent that now is all democracies. And justice was a huge factor in that change.
The Reckoning is playing this week at the Human Rights Watch International Film Festival in London. You can also find out more about the film and the International Criminal Court by visiting ijcentral.org. Paco de Anes twitters about the International Criminal Court, and he's planning to involve Africans and others in text message conversations about justice. Elise Kepler works on international justice issues at Human Rights Watch. Human Rights Watch is an independent organization dedicated to defending and protecting human rights around the world. For more about us, including audio, video, and multimedia features, please visit hrw.org. Thanks for listening to Rights Watch. I'm Jesse Graham.